is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Top of the hour, it is VSiN. Bob Books, Dave Ross right here at Circa Sports in Mint Gaming Hall in Franklin, Kentucky. Our closer, Jensen Lewis, back home in Cleveland, Ohio. Rex Hoggard is going to join us down in Florida at the Arnold Palmer Invitational a little bit later on this hour. Adam Burke, Wes Reynolds will round out our show today in hour number three. So a lot to get to, Jensen, but we do always talk about it, this being college basketball's time to shine. The NFL is always like, wait a second, not so fast, my friends. That's where we begin our highlights and headlines.
Help your bottom line with today's highlights and headlines.
Murray's on the move, and when he's playing good quarterback, he's normally on the move. So you're going to get a mobile quarterback, we know. After seven seasons in the desert, the Cardinals have informed Kyler that your services are no longer required in the desert. And I thought Kyler put out a very, at least professional, adult response out on social media yesterday, basically saying, paraphrasing, hey, I apologize. I loved my time here. I didn't get it done. Not like a passing the buck thing. I take ownership over the failures here. But he also added the caveat, Jensen Lewis, that he believes his best football is yet to come. And I know some people might scoff at that notion, but I think we've seen some examples here of quarterbacks that actually got better in different places than the first stop. Don't know where stop number two is going to be, but do you believe that Kyler Murray still has better football yet to be played?
With his feet, what have we seen? You know, imitation, sincerest form of flattery, where you can have the dual threat quarterback. Mentioned it to you at the beginning of the show. For those just joining us, I would put the Minnesota Vikings squarely in that conversation because of what Kevin O'Connell can do. The whisperer there, mm-hmm. They're ready to win. They've got elite weapons. And I think that is a unique spot that he could be plug and play right away, and the Vikings would be a contender.
Yeah, it's so weird. The perception changes for me instantly now that he's out of Arizona. And then you almost go back to like, ooh, it feels like a new toy. And what's this toy going to look like in a different place? Because we know it didn't fit here. That toy didn't work in Arizona. But I think it might be able to get rebooted, as we've seen so many other guys get rebooted, like Daniel Jones last year, right? So all of a sudden, if you go back to the Giants in the end there and Brian Daboll, they released him, if you remember. And then it was interesting because the Vikings stowed him away. They remember that. They picked him up, and yet he didn't play for the Vikings, never saw the field there. But then they let him go after the year ended up, and he went to the Colts. And all of a sudden, he beats out Anthony Richardson, and he's moving up the MVP board. The Colts are, they would have been the presumptive number one seed, if you will, in the AFC. It's 7-1 to get the start to their season. They look like gangbusters, and then the injuries happen, and the Colts fall off in the second half because they didn't have their signal caller. So the transition tag goes on Daniel Jones, not the franchise tag. So what this means here, people, is if he gets an offer from another team or other teams, the Colts can match that offer. So it's a way of potentially holding on to Daniel Jones, but I wonder if the offer's really good, will he be on the move from Indy?
I think that's the one thing that the hedge is from Chris Ballard and his front office for Indianapolis. You save $6 million with the transition tag, and it allows you some time to be able to match, you know, if another club comes in. I think it's the injury timeline that would be the risk for me, and the mm-hmm. injury itself, Dave. If I'm a club that wants to go out and try and sign him for market value, or at least maybe below that to try and save, That's my risk. Will I have him for the entirety of the year? And what is my timeline for him to be back to full strength?
Because I do think we talked about Anthony Richardson earlier in the week here, that their representatives have been told by the coach, you can go look for a trade if you want. I mean, the future is not Anthony Richardson in Indianapolis, but if you do make this commitment and somebody else gives him an offer and you match that offer sheet, that means you're committing to Daniel Jones long-term to let him heal, whether this year or next year. I don't know what it's going to look like for Kenneth Walker III, but this is not a surprise here that the Seahawks have not put the franchise tag on right now the Super Bowl MVP. So he was great in that game. He was great all year long, but that's not the way they do business in the Pacific Northwest. Clearly, they don't do business like that in Cincinnati, as they're saying, Trey Hendrickson, you're going to be unrestricted as well. So they couldn't work out a deal for Trey to keep him. They couldn't figure out one to trade him. They might not get anything. here, and maybe a compensatory pick here if you lose him in free agency. But Jensen, short of that, I wonder if both these guys could be on the move.
Cincinnati was not going to pay him, you know, fair value anyway. And dear God, he is probably as happy as anybody. He'll do the right thing publicly. Mm-hmm. But that franchise tag or the edge tag, I think would have been what, upwards of maybe $30 million, or it would have been an astronomical number. I may be off on the exact number, but it's still way too much for Mike Brown and company to want to be able to shell out there. You nailed it on Kenneth Walker. John Schneider does not do historically the tags. I think it was a smart move economically. I think people were projecting Kenneth Walker around $9 million average annual value. The tag would have put him upwards of 14 and a half. So it gives the Seahawks, and I have to believe, Dave, they have a very good idea of what the return timeline and anticipation for Zach Charbonnet would be. So maybe some mm-hmm. cost certainty here, but with still a chance to re-sign him if indeed that reunion is potential for down the road.
I'll be curious to see what he wants, what Kenneth Walker wants. Obviously, he wants to get paid like a top guy, right? So we get that. But does he want to be the lead back? Like, he's the lead back, but does he want to be the exclusive back like we might see with Jahmyr Gibbs in Detroit now that David Montgomery's gone? It'd be very interesting to see what he actually wants out there, because it does feel like it fits in Seattle. We had the draft here yesterday, the MLB Futures draft. You can still watch it here, VEASAN's YouTube channel, at VEASAN Live. And you had the 10th pick out of 10 participants in said draft. So that meant you went bang, bang, back to back, a lot of Seattle, a lot of Mets love, and a lot of Royals love. And boy, do I love two of those three, because I got some tickets on both the Mets and the Royals. Jensen, go down your board here for the people that missed the draft.
Yeah, big run on the awards market to five of, I believe, the first 10. So no, six, I believe. No, five, six. Yes, six. Dear God. Six MVP selections within the first 10 picks of the first round of this MLB Futures draft. You're looking at Juan Soto, Aaron Judge, Bobby Witt Jr., Shohei Ohtani, Cal Raleigh, Nick Kurtz, all of them off the board there. That to me shifted where I was going to eventually go. And I still got four of the top 11 categories, as far as I got four picks that were my top selections on mm-hmm. my big board in those 11 categories, that being the Royals to win the Central, my top overall selection, the Mariners at 5-1 to win the American League pennant, the Dodgers under their win total of 102.5 wins, and then Munetaka Murakami 6-1 to win the American League Rookie of the Year. Big power bat that the White Sox, and it was a shock, Dave, that the White Sox were able to get him from overseas. He'll hit in the middle of their lineup. Mm-hmm. Just a year ago, it was Nick Kurtz that hit over 30 home runs to win the American League Rookie of the Year. Murakami has that kind of power. Now, is he going to hit for enough average? That'll be the question. I think Chicago will be drastically improved. Are they a contender in the Central? No. Are they a contender for a playoff spot? No. But the Rookie of the Year market, very fluid and more towards the position players. Outside of Luis Gil and Paul Skenes from just a couple of years ago that won it respectively in the National League and American League, you tend to want to go for more position players here. But overall, I feel very, very happy with where everything ended up, from how I put my big board together to eventually how it came together.
Yeah, that Murakami bomb hits at 60-1. I think we know who the winner is going to be of this said first ever VEASAN MLB Futures Draft. That is fascinating. Again, check it out here on our YouTube page and YouTube channel if you have not seen it yet, at VEASAN Live. We know that the Yankees are always contenders, no matter what they do. We also know that Aaron Judge is with Team USA as we get the WBC starting tonight with Chinese Taipei taking on Australia. Now, you know, Team USA winning gold in Milan at the Olympics for the USA hockey, the men and the women doing that. Sometimes you need a little inspiration. So maybe the captain of the Yankees, Aaron Judge, inspired up the boys to get it fired up for Team USA.
Sacrifice for your family at home. You're sacrificing for your country, and you're sacrificing for the brothers in the trenches with you every single day. And that's one thing I want us to do, fellas. You know, we're down, we're beat up a little bit, man. You know, lean into each other, man. We're going to lay it out on the line. If we do that, we'll bring the gold home, man. I'm telling you.
Okay, so maybe it's not fire and brimstone, Jensen, but I like the messaging, right? Like, so, you know, everybody does it differently. What'd you make of Judge trying to get the boys to rally around the flag?
just doesn't feel like him, man. You know, and you're watching his facial features. And I feel like he's going to crack up laughing that it's a bit. Like, yeah. Oh, they wanted me to do this for social media or whatever, because it's hard to equal Herb Brooks from yesteryear, isn't man. Hey boys, just go out. Watched him a little bit yesterday. This is a lineup that's got Aaron Judge hitting in between Bryce Harper and Kyle Schwarber yesterday. Bobby Witt Jr. leading off. I mean, dear God, it's going to be some tough sledding for the opposing pitching staffs that got to face them there in Pool B.
So it wasn't the same Herb Brooks in the gold medal match against Finland. If you lose to a bunch of Finns, you'll take this to your blanking graves. You're blanking graves. It's a little bit different, the message that Aaron Judge is giving right now to what Herb Brooks did back in Lake Placid in 1980. Jerickson Profar is not going to be playing, it doesn't look like, for the entire year. Jensen, a second PED suspension. That comes with a full season suspension here, 162. I don't know what to say about this other than terrible for the Braves, but for the player, you're jeopardizing your career.
Second strike, and it should be the last one. Just idiocy beyond belief that this could happen yet again.
You reap what you sow, and Profar not going to be playing. It doesn't look like this year. I wonder if an appeal's coming, how that's going to work out. You do not have to pay full price for gas any longer. Check out the free Upside app. Use the promo code BOOKS, title of this show. Get an extra 25 cents back per gallon on your very first fill up. So download the free Upside app now. Use the promo code BOOKS. Limited time, 25 cents per gallon bonus. Offers vary by user and location. Go to upside.com for all of the terms and conditions. So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match it. Here's the thing. Pro bettors, they spend thousands on data and tools. But what they don't know and don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you're going to get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and so much more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
We continue VSiN by the Books. This show is sponsored by Upside. Download the free Upside app right now. Start earning cash back on gas purchases today. When you use the promo code BOOKS, title of this show, you're going to get 25 cents back per gallon on your very first fill up. All you got to do is go to upside.com for all of the terms and conditions. It is a lot of fun talking a lot of Major League Baseball. It is March. That means opening day is right around the corner here. Let's get to it as we continue with today's edition of the Daily Diamond. I know the JVT is getting ready for Money Moves later on, 2 to 4 p.m. This afternoon and every afternoon here on the network with Stormy Bonantoni. But I'm sure he'd love to be a fly on the wall for this segment right here as we're talking about the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim of Orange County, JVT's team. Jensen, what do you make of this team? Big trade in the offseason here. Not a good year last year, only 72 wins. And the projection this year is actually worse at 70.5.
Dead last year, as you mentioned, in the American League West, and a team that is still kind of searching for not only health, but also continuity throughout their pitching staff. So as I began kind of looking at them overall, some bright spots to kind of hitch your wagon to. One is their man in the leadoff spot in the middle of the diamond. That is none other than shortstop Zach Neto. Breakout campaign for him last year, far and away now. And this is crazy to say with Mike Trout still on the team. Zach Neto, their best position player and maybe their best overall player right now. So behind him in the lineup, Nolan Schanuel, first base, Mike Trout will probably do more of the DHing this year in between center field with Joe Adell out there. And then Jorge Soler in left. Josh Lowe coming over in a trade with the Tampa Bay Rays will now be the right fielder. Logan Ohapi, one of the young catchers that not only is great behind the dish, but has got some juice with the bat too. It'll be a lengthened lineup, but not in the sense that you're used to seeing with contending lineups. Yoan Moncada will be their third baseman. Christian Moore, young phenom, was out of the University of Tennessee just a couple of years ago. More than likely their opening day second baseman. So the lineup, I think, Dave, should be a little bit better. They were fine hitting homers last year. They were fourth. I don't think people realize the LA Angels were fourth in big league baseball hitting home runs last year. They were dead last in average. So, Dave, that tells you they're a three true outcome team here. All right? There's going to be a lot of swing and miss with this club, but when they connect, it's a lot of slug, and it goes usually over the fence. So we'll see how that all plays out this year. They're going to need to improve on being 25th in runs scored, and they may get a little bit of help here from a little bit more of a bolstered rotation. You talked about the big trade this offseason. Taylor Ward, their middle-of-the-order bat, now a member of the Baltimore Orioles. He was traded for Grayson Rodriguez, and Rodriguez, one of the top pitching prospects, not only for Baltimore a couple of years ago, but also in all of Major League Baseball. He has front of the rotation ability, but it has been an injury that was one of the talks of the offseason, Dave. The Angels rumored to not even look at physicals before consummating this trade, and I don't know how that happens when you have a young player who has been hurt and has spent significant time on the IL. However, if he's right, then he teams with you say, I say, we say Kikuchi as the ace of the staff, and Jose Soriano, a power right-handed fastball pitcher. That's a big three you could actually kind of sink your teeth into, especially with what Kikuchi and Soriano did last year. It's the back end of the bullpen that gives me a little bit more of a bullish nature on their over for the win total, Dave. It's set at 70.5, and Perry Manassian, their general manager, did a great job of being able to reinforce with some quality veteran free agent signees. Drew Pomerantz, you remember him as a setup man for the Chicago Cubs this past year. Kirby Yates was in the Dodgers bullpen. Jordan Romano was closing for the Philadelphia Phillies early in the season last year. Those three big free agent signees to go along with Robert Stevenson, who is kind of the closer in-house at the moment. They're going to be able to shorten games a lot more this year, Dave. And I think that gives them a fighting chance to be able to get over their win total.
We both, and we'll get to the A's as we continue Daily Diamond. We're going to break down every single team in Major League Baseball as we go before we get to opening day. But if we do believe that the A's are going to be better this year as well, if you believe that the Angels win total potentially could be an overplay at 70.5, that's got to take some wins away from the perceived top of the division, which would be Seattle, Houston, and Texas in whatever order we believe those teams would be. Are the Angels good enough to, I don't want to say win 80 games. I think if you're looking at division, you got to be looking 85, right? As a median, just to even have a chance to win a division. I don't know if we have any visions of grandeur of a team like that. But when you look at it, Alek Manoah, and you look at a Reed Detmers there, if they are the back end of that starting rotation past that big three, if we want to call them a big three. But again, if Grayson Rodriguez is right, that's why you make the trade for Taylor Ward. Why you make a move like that with such a prominent player like Ward can be. Is that good enough? Is that 4-5 good enough to get through the rotation on a weekly basis and give yourself a chance to win on those off days that the big three aren't pitching?
I think so, but we also have to temper that knowing that you are in a division with the Seattle Mariners, who I think have every opportunity to not only get back to the ALCS, but potentially win it. Big reason why I picked them that 5-1 in our VSiN MLB futures draft yesterday. I think Houston takes a step back. I think if you're looking for a big regressor in the American League West, it would be the Astros. So many question marks in their rotation, especially without Framber Valdez. Hunter Brown's going to be great. He's going to contend for the Cy Young in the American League, but so many injuries that are littered through that pitching staff and uncertainty as well. Here's what if I'm an Angels fan, I would very much think that because you have the experience you just added with those three bullpen arms, it allows you an opportunity to not overextend that rotation, Dave. You can be a bit more conservative if you're Kurt Suzuki, who was just hired this offseason. Odd deal, by the way, just a one-year deal. Incredibly odd. Mm-hmm. That just does not happen. But you have a group that, from a bullpen standpoint, it might be one of the better, I think, roster constructions that we've seen at least in the last half decade there in the City of Angels. So they'll have a much better chance to try and win series where you were so worried about leads. And regardless of how big the lead was late in games, they just didn't have guys that were reliable to shut the door, Dave. So I think that allows you, if you're a Kikuchi, just kind of pin your ears back. If it's five and dive, great. We got some guys that can bridge the gap to the end there. Here's my key. One of my bold takes is that Zach Neto becomes a top 10 shortstop in all of Major League Baseball this year. Everything is there for that kid to be able to take off. So if you're looking at potential player props, he might be a guy that could be 30-30, 30 more homers, 30 more stolen bases this year. I think that is a very viable thing and an achievement that he could get. Joe Adell, breakout last year with the power numbers. Looking at some of the projections, got him at least for 30 home runs this year. The average is not going to be anywhere near 250. So that's the key for me, is looking at where are you in the middle of this lineup. Jorge Soler, years past, was great. Can there be enough balls put in play? Bottom of that lineup needs to stay healthy. Can they turn it over? It's there as far as power. Can they improve on the OPS? If so, it's all of a sudden a little bit more positive outlook. Not saying they're going to contend for a playoff spot. It's a tough division to be in, but I think they should be markedly better than 72-90 and the basement of the West from just a season ago.
You mentioned the Chief, Kurt Suzuki, coming over, and he's a legend in Washington, D.C. for his days there, helping them win a World Series title. In that, you know, knowing the position of catcher, and you mentioned the kind of five and dive here, what type of impact do you think Suzuki will have in the pitching staff? Because I always feel like when you're bringing in a catcher to be your skipper, it's more like I'm handling the pitching staff, but from the bench. You know what I mean? That's where I'm really controlling this team.
Also, a guy that is just freshly removed from the game, Dave, and we're seeing that trend a lot more. You know, we saw it here in Cleveland with Stephen Vogt, just a handful of years removed from actually playing, and that, I think, is something to relate to young players. There is urgency because, as I said, very awkward. You usually see
one-year
newly
deal.
Hired managers get at least a 3-4 year deal. I thought that to me was... wow. I mean, that's tough. Uh-huh. You're asking a lot of a guy who's never done the role and then is going to do it at the major league level. And oh, by the way, if you don't do well, you're out of a job potentially after just one season.
Seems very odd. 40-1 to win the West. So an extreme long shot there that we're picking up for the LA Angels. We know that obviously it's the best time of the year here to bet. So right now we've got a great deal as we head into March Madness in earnest. The Hoops Mania Special. You can get VSiN Pro access from now through May 1st, Jensen, it's just $29.99. So with VSiN Pro, you're going to get all of our daily best bets from all of our hosts and guests. Real-time DraftKings Circa betting splits as well. AI-powered prop tools, match analysis, 24/7 video, full show replays in the VSiN Watch app, plus our March Mania betting guide, including team profiles for every tournament team, key trends for each round, and all of our top analysis from all of our analysts here on the network. So if you're going to bet the tournament, of course you are. This is a must. Sign up today at VSiN.com/subscribe. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Always love catching up with Rex Hager, talking all things Arnold Palmer Invitational next on VSiN by the Books.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
We continue VSiN by the Books. This show is sponsored by Upside. You can earn real cash back at the pump with the free Upside app. All you got to do is use the promo code BOOKS. Get 25 cents back per gallon on your very first fill-up. Just go to upside.com for all of the details. Jensen, you and I get pumped up to talk golf every week. We love it when Rex Hoggard is kind enough to take the time to join us here on VSiN by the Books. Senior writer for Golf Channel. Does a great job if you're watching that network, as I do often. And give him a follow on X at Rex Hoggard GC. And Rex, I guess not too far from where you are in Florida for a hop, skip, and a jump to get over to the API for that coverage later on this week, of course. How big is this tournament as an elevated event with the history of the name of Arnold Palmer, the dominance Tiger Woods had, and now with Rory and Scotty seemingly picking up that mantle at the Arnold Palmer Invitational?
I think you have a tiered system, a pretty clear tiered system right now in the PGA Tour. You have the majors, you have the Players' Championship, you have the signature events. But within the signature events, I think you can point to this one And you can point to what at the Genesis Invitational, which of course is hosted by Tiger Woods. It's the only two signature events that have a cut along with the Memorial. I think those three, just not only because they're signature events, but because of who's involved with them. The name of Arnold Palmer, he's still very prevalent around the property. I was there yesterday. His grandson, Sam Saunders, is running the event now, and they're doing a phenomenal job. I think it's always a bit of a struggle. You saw it with the Byron Nelson after Mr. Nelson passed away, to sort of keep that legacy going. But they've done a really good job at Arnold Palmer of doing that.
No question. And Rex, again, another elevated event where we get all the studs involved here and a unique course setup here too. For people that are not familiar with how it sets up for maybe some of the big hitters on tour versus guys with some better accuracy, handicap it for us and kind of the layout for it as well.
I think a few years ago, Rory probably handicapped it better than anyone else possibly could with what he did on the 10th tee. And that's just a perfect example of what you can do when you can carry the ball as far as he does, where you can stand on that 10th tee and you're not looking at fairway or bunkers or anything else. You're looking over houses and out of bounds markers because you want to drive the green, which he ended up doing. And I think more and more you're starting to see that, where Scottie Scheffler, one of the longest players on the PGA Tour, he's had so much success here. Rory has won here. Tiger Woods, back in the day, he had so much success here. Power is one of those key statistics this week. Last week at PGA National, not necessarily the case. You needed to find the fairway. You needed to take advantage of your wedge play. This week, you can overpower this golf course, but there is an element to it where we have seen it turn around and bite players. You look at the forecast for this week, I think Thursday and Friday could be really difficult. So if you're going to handicap the field, you can always lean towards those guys who are at the top statistically. Guy that came in the media center yesterday that really got my interest was Chris Goderup, where he has now won multiple times on the PGA Tour this season. And he's never played this golf course before, but his game fits perfectly here. He would be one of those guys I keep an eye on.
Let me give you a couple names. I just want to get your thoughts on where they are right now, the same odds point that we have in the board. So obviously, when you look at Scottie being the short shot, he's going to be every week. Rory's going to be nipping at the heels there pretty much every week. Those two guys are in. At 25-1, there's two guys that interest me. One is Colin Morikawa. He feels like he's a different guy now. We know about the baby coming here for the family. He's won on tour again. Seems like the happy-go-lucky Colin Morikawa that won a couple majors early in his career. And Xander Schauffele. This was the best player in the world, arguably, just a couple of years ago, and it looks like he's rounding back into shape. Where would you be on those two guys at the same price point this week?
I think Morikawa would be the one I'd lean towards, simply because of what he's already been able to accomplish this season. Winning at Pebble Beach was huge, not just for his career. I think you look at what he has done, winning multiple majors. I think he was satisfied with what he had done. But against that field, on that golf course, in those conditions, that's what Colin Morikawa does best. He is not the guy I just described. He's not the guy that's going to overpower a course, but his iron play is just sublime. He is one of the best in the business when he is hitting it well, and he hasn't really hit it well the last few years, but everything came together at Pebble Beach. And you look at what he did here last year. He probably could have easily won this event. He was disappointed that he didn't finish it off, but I think the golf course sets up well for him with that iron play. And he's in a, as you pointed out, just a much better headspace, let's call it, because he and his wife are happy. They have the baby on the way. Everything that probably wasn't there before the last few years, as far as not quite being in the right headspace, is there now.
Rex, I looked in my card this week and anxious your thoughts on a couple of guys, Matt Fitzpatrick and Tommy Fleetwood. Again, if you're looking at some of the big dogs that could contend against Scottie and Rory, their games kind of suited for what the expectations are of this course. And then adding in some recent form here, am I in the ballpark, especially with this course setup and where those guys mentally and physically can attack this course as well?
I mean, I don't know that I would, this is a really good reason to lean towards Tommy Fleetwood, but let's be honest. You can see him in one of those cardigan sweaters, can't you? Like those Arnold Palmer cardigan sweaters, they're perfect for Tommy Fleetwood. I can absolutely see, he wears them, I think, normally in real life. So I think it'd be a perfect fit for him. And what was he was able to accomplish last year? We all said he was the best player without a PGA Tour title until he decided to do it in really good style, finishing up the season at the Tour Championship. Not only do you get that first win, but you also won the FedEx Cup. He started the season strong on the DP World Tour. And he's one of those players, kind of call it the Joe Biden effect. He's always there. He's always just going to be around for the leaderboard. And you're right. He's going to be one of those guys to keep an eye on because there isn't any flaws in his game. Like if you want to go down the list, like I just missing Chris Goderup, his short game probably needs to improve. He needs to get better around the greens. When it comes to Tommy Fleetwood, I would challenge anyone to give me something statistically that he doesn't do well enough. And I just think he continues to do that 1% thing, get better every single day. So I would love Tommy this week.
All right, Rex, I got to ask you a $1 million question because, you know, Scottie Scheffler is going to be the short shot at plus 350. He, for whatever reason, Thursdays have been his bugaboo so far on the PGA Tour. You could play him plus 1050 to be first round leader tomorrow, or Shane Lowry is 40-1 first round leader to show the ultimate bounce back after what we just saw on Sunday. Out of those two juicy price points, which way would you go?
I think I said it on the show on Monday when we were talking about it. Well, it depends. Is Scottie Scheffler going to wake up and hate Thursday mornings again? Because that seems to be the case for him the last few starts. And it makes no sense. We're trying to sort of dissect this and figure out what's wrong with Scotty on Thursdays. And the answer is golf is what's wrong with Scotty, even though he makes it look so easy and he almost makes it look effortless sometimes. Sometimes golf just gets him and it just happens to be on Thursdays. Our co-host Ryan Lavner pointed out a really good stat that last year on the PGA Tour, he led the tour in first round scoring. So he didn't seem to have a problem with it last year. I think this is just an anomaly. You look at what he did at the American Express at an event that I probably would have argued that, yeah, this isn't really Scotty's brand of vodka, because he doesn't particularly like low scoring contests. He likes it where par is a good score and he laps the field by five strokes. I'm going to stick with Scotty until he proves to me that he gets through an entire season and somehow can't score on Thursdays. But no, what I've seen so far doesn't concern me.
All right, Rex, maybe for off the beaten path guys, and we have a lot of daily fantasy players that listen, also people that love to play the placement markets instead of the outrights. Anyone you can envision making the weekend that might be a name, maybe not readily available or readily recognizable, someone or maybe a couple of guys that could be suited for this course, but also find their way into Saturday and maybe eventually Sunday?
Well, I lean towards some of the younger players that we were introduced to last week. And that's the beauty of an event like the Cognizant Classic. I think Austin Smotherin proved a lot to the world and himself that he's good enough to compete on the PGA Tour at this level. It was more than just a top five finish last week for Austin. He needed that finish just to get in to this week. And I think he's on a good run. I think maybe fatigue might catch up at some point because he plans on playing everything between now and I think his wife is expecting their third child on March 22nd, but he would be a guy I would keep an eye on. The other one, and I was talking with him yesterday, again, he needed a big Sunday at the PGA National as well, is Keith Mitchell. He's played here a couple of times. His game is rounding into good form. He's one of those guys that has plenty of length off the tee where he can take a lot of those cross bunkers that Arnie loves so much out of play. Either one of those guys I would assume have really good numbers to him. And I would actually be surprised if they don't make the cut. To miss the cut at this event, it's limited field. You got to play really bad.
Well, I have one guy that I just can't stop betting. It's like, I just can't quit this guy. I got to ask you about him. That's the big Swede, Ludvig Åberg. What's going on with Ludvig? He got me a top 20 at least last time out, kind of backdoored it. But what's going on with Ludvig here? Is there anything that we need to read between the lines here? Or is it just a slump?
You know how this is the golf nerd in me. You know how you can get on your phone and start doom scrolling. And next thing you know, you've been staring for an hour and you're like, I've wasted an entire hour. I did that yesterday with Ludvig on the range. I just kind of doomed watched him swing because I get so captivated by it. I've always said that Adam Scott has aesthetically the best swing on the PGA Tour. I don't think it's the most efficient. I don't think it's the most powerful. Like I think the swing coach will tell you that there were plenty of other players who actually have better swings than Adam. But I've always felt like he had the best looking swing. I think Ludvig does now. He never misses a shot. He hits the center of the club face every single time. I'm going to try to warn you off him a little bit, and here's the only reason why. He had to leave Bay Hill yesterday and go back to South Florida for the TGL match last night, and he's got an early tee time in the Pro-Am today. So fatigue might be a little bit of a factor there.
All right, 33-1 in the big sweep. I'm going to stay away. Rex, it's a real treat to have you on each and every week that we get to have you before a big tournament like we have this week at the API. Great coverage on the Golf Channel as always. We'll catch up again soon.
Thanks, guys.
There he is, Rex Hoggard. Again, give him a follow on X at Rex Hoggard GC. So he walked me off the Ludvig Åberg ledge, so I'm not going to go down that path. Maybe a top 20. Maybe I'll sneak in a top 20, but I'm not going to do it outright. All right, when we come back here, since let's get back into our baseball talk here and talk about those Cincinnati Reds, a team that you and I really liked a year ago. What do we think of the Reds this year and their prognosis? That's next right here on VSiN by the Book.
You're tuned in to V VSiN by the books, right here on VSiN.
We are back, VSiN by the books. Dave Ross Jensen Lewis here. Every time you fill up at the pump, you could earn real cash back with the free Upside app. All you got to do is download Upside from the App Store or Google Play. And when you're going to claim an offer at a nearby station, you're going to start earning instantly. Use the promo code BOOKS, title of this show. Get an extra 25 cents back per gallon on your first fill up. So drivers are saving real money, up to 200, 300 bucks a year, despite doing the normal commutes they have to do anyway. So download the free Upside app now. Use the promo code BOOKS for your 25 cent per gallon bonus. Offers vary by user and location. See upside.com for all of the particulars. Great having Rex Hoggard from the Golf Channel on in the last segment, talking all things Arnold Palmer Invitational. We're going to have Wes Reynolds join us at the very end of this program today. And again, if you're a VSiN Pro subscriber, you already have access to Wes's selections. We'll break those down here later on the program. Already getting some texts from some buddies about Rex's appearance saying, Rex bringing that information. Yeah, some really good information. I thought that was out there. And I'll just say this very quickly, Jensen. I might play Scottie Scheffler first round leader at plus 1050. To that point of it being an anomaly. You're never going to get a better number than that on Scotty, even though for some reason he's not playing well on Thursdays right now. It does feel like some bizarre thing that's going to change very, very soon. Let's get back to our baseball conversation here. I love talking Daily Diamond here. And let's go to the Reds today. This was a very profitable team for yours truly last year. And again, the win total last year was 78.5. That was one of the first plays I think both you and I put in this time last year. And I always say it, I'm looking for a team that might get five wins over that total. They got just about that, 4.5 more to 83, and then had some longer shots and then making the postseason. They got there in the last day of the regular season at the expense of my Metropolitans. What do we make of this year? Look at that win total. It's up 3 full wins from a year ago, from 78.5 to 81.5. Do you think that adjustment is proper?
Gosh, this was one of the hardest win totals for me. I waffled back and forth, and I made it just a lean to the under 82.5 in the VSiN MLB betting guide. Here is where you look for the upside. Number one, if this rotation stays even remotely healthy, like I'm talking, if you can get Hunter Green, Brady Singer, Andrew Abbott, Nick Lodolo, if those guys can at least get you 25 starts apiece, you are absolutely in business. And I know that's super conservative. If you get them, all four of those guys, upwards of 28 to 30 at least, and then you have Chase Burns as your number five starter, Dave, that's where you start to dream on the possibilities for the Cincinnati Reds. Now, that being said, we know that the injury bug has plagued this particular rotation in many, many ways the last handful of years. So that was part of my caveat of really having to take a second look at maybe the over in their win total. As someone who has pitched in the Great American Small Park, the Great American Launching Pad there, when the weather starts to get much more humid and the ball is going to the jet stream of right center and left center field, the addition of Eugenio Suarez back to this lineup, I thought was so critical, not only from a continuity standpoint and lineup protection for Elly De La Cruz and some of the other bats in the middle, but also the camaraderie. And Dave, sometimes there are puzzle pieces to teams where that locker room just gels. He was a fan favorite. He was beloved by teammates at every stop he's been on. And it just so happens that his first tour of duty in Cincinnati, Reds were pretty damn good. So very bullish on what he could mean as a 1-2 punch with Elly De La Cruz in the middle. Couple of guys to keep your eye on in the lineup. Sal Stewart is going to get a lot of headlines here. Their young rookie phenom that at one point it looked like he was going to be kind of that starting, you know, DH, but now with Suarez in there, that would slide him to first, and then we'll see what happens with Spencer Steer because there is kind of a domino effect there. I am hearing exceptional things about Matt McClain in this spring training. Remember, just 2 years ago, Dave, he was kind of that cornerstone, that foundational piece with Elly De La Cruz. Like, okay, here are the two guys that we can build this offense around for years to come. He's made a swing adjustment. He's made kind of a stance adjustment too. And that has really been very, very encouraging from these early couple of weeks of spring training games. That's a name to keep an eye on. Back end of their lineup, Noelvi Marte, who did a great job in right field last year. He is going to stay there. Ke'Bryan Hayes, the Gold Glover at third. That allows Eugenio Suarez to not have to play there. He can be the full-time DH. J.J. Bleda, a very intriguing signing, former Vandy boy and also a member of the Athletics. He hit in the middle of their lineup for many years until they were able to get the lineup that they have right now with Brent Rooker.
Yeah.
And obviously Tyler Soderstrom and company. He's going to be able to kind of be hidden, if you will, towards the bottom, but he lengthens the lineup. He'll be great defensively and left. And then you got one of the more underrated leadoff hitters in TJ Friedl, who will set the table. I would envision that Tito Francona would probably get some sort of speed on base combination in front of Elly De La Cruz. Anxious to see what lineup construction will be like for them moving forward. But Dave, this is a lineup that was right at league average, just above league average in runs scored. The power wasn't really there all of last year. Does it return this year? If it does, the Reds are alive and well if that rotation stays healthy.
You know, in the end, they cashed every ticket that I had on them, but they were frustrating to get there because they lost a bunch of 1-0 games. They could not score early in the year, as we talked about on this program a lot last year. And Matt McClain was one of those guys watching every night, like, dude, what's going on? And you know Terry Francona very, very well. And I saw him adjusting McClain last year in the lineup, going from the 2-hole, 8-hole, 9-hole, you name it. Like, I got to move him out of this spot. And you don't want to wreck a guy's confidence here. Where do you think they put McClain? Because I'm with you. If this team is going to, whether they cash a ticket to plus 425 to win the Central, to make a run at a pennant at 22-1, right? Cash that over ticket at 81.5. I do think McClain is that key guy that people won't talk about because all look at De La Cruz and everybody else and the pitching staff, that if they can figure him out, do they put him back at the 2-hole? Because he did offer some pop there a couple of years ago early in that lineup.
It makes the most sense to me, Dave, we having Elly behind him and knowing you still have the speed of Friedel and McClain, you're not going to clog that with Ellie's elite speed. So you've got, you know, a real dynamic top of the order there. And those are great table setters in front of Elly De La Cruz, in front of Eugenio Suarez. As I mentioned, you know, anxious to see if the youngster in Sal Stewart, you know, hits fifth or sixth. Tyler Stevenson, remember, he's got pretty good pop from the catching spot. Will there be sort of a platoon when you have Spencer Steer? He was a guy that hit in the middle of the order a lot. Remember, Will Benson was a key part of their outfield. So they have some depth pieces there. It is, I think, a much more balanced lineup than maybe they get credit for. Back into the bullpen, Dave saw two really outstanding individual performances. Emilio Pagan really took that closing role and was one of the best in the business in 2025. Tony Santion, one of the better leverage relievers too, as a setup man. That's the 1-2 punch. Here is the big addition that I think is going to prove as a difference maker. Pierce Johnson, who is a free agent signee from Atlanta. I think he can team with Brock Burke, who came over in a trade with the Angels. Caleb Ferguson, the veteran, you'll remember him. Well-traveled veteran. He was in Seattle at the end of the season. Graham Ashcraft has kind of been a converted starter into a leverage reliever. They've got the pieces, man. They really do. It's really all about health for this group. You've got the Hall of Fame manager in Tito. He's going to press all the right buttons. And if you want to look at just kind of a line of demarcation, Terry Francona, since 2013, has had the most wins in the second half of any active manager, okay? He knows how to make those key adjustments and in crunch time there when you got to be winning into the trade deadline and then the sprint to the finish in August and September. I wrote in our betting guide, Dave, this was my outlook. The offensive output can't mirror its 2025 results, or this team is destined for a 500 campaign trying to win a bunch of low-scoring games, which you alluded to. If they get the early offense and they get sustained health out of that rotation, my oh my, is the sky the limit, I think, for the Cincinnati Reds.
And that's where I am on the. I don't have any tickets on them this time this year. Last year, we had a bunch of them already in pocket here. As my biggest play on the board was at over 78.5 wins. And that really, it was a bit of a sweat for a while, but they ended up getting there relatively easily in September. That part of that was the belief in Tito Francona that Terry would get this thing figured out. And he did, to your point, in the second half where they really made that push. So if they get off to a better start, am I going to look at that and go, why didn't I bet this team again this year? Because I do. I look at it the way you do, and I think everything on paper looks good You got a manager I can trust. If you can get the health, there really doesn't seem to be a whole lot of weaknesses with this baseball team.
And Hunter Green's going to be right in that Cy Young competition. It was a breakout campaign for him last year. And man, if you like a lot of swing and miss and a lot of free air conditioning, Great American Ballpark, when the Reds starters are on the mound, that's going to be the place to be.
I might need to be invested in those Reds again. I just like this baseball team a lot, and I like rooting for Terry Francona as well. All right, we have a lot to get to here in the final hour. We're going to have Wes Reynolds, our Wednesdays with Wes, break down everything in the API, the Arnold Palmer, and our managing editor, Adam Burke, talking some baseball in our baseball draft we had yesterday right here on the network. Come on back. It's VSiN by the Books.